Christ is risen. So if you've been paying attention since Easter, since Pascha, the so-called epistle reading has not actually been a selection from one of Paul or Peter's letters or one of the other apostles, but it's actually selected readings from the fifth book of the New Testament called the Acts of the Apostles. And this is the time of year from Pascha to Pentecost when the church publicly reads the Acts of the Apostles. So if you do your daily readings that you get, you know, through your email or whatever from the Archdiocese, you know, you'll see that one reading after the other, pretty much you get through the book of Acts. And we know that the book of Acts is the first years of the church. And while we don't necessarily do everything today exactly like it was in the Acts, nothing that we do contradicts the Bible or the Acts. And we see, for example, today how the apostles ordained deacons, you know, but it gives us an idea of how those things started and other things. Acts, very important book, very interesting. Another time that the book of Acts is read in some places like monasteries is Saturday, Holy Saturday night before the resurrection service. They come and they sit around for like 4 hours and they read the book of Acts out loud for each other in church. You know, you'll take one chapter and the next person will come and read another chapter, et cetera, et cetera. So in those places, the book of Acts is read twice a year, once all together and then like we're hearing it. In any case, you probably remember from last year on this day when I spoke about today's reading of the book of Acts. So I'm not going to repeat it because I mean, it was just last year. But today is also considered the third Sunday from Pascha. If Pascha is the first Sunday, Thomas Sunday is the second Sunday, this would be the third Sunday. And it's dedicated to the myrrh bearers. And there's myrrh-bearing women, and there's also myrrh-bearing men. I dug this up from my talk in 2012. You probably don't remember this one. So, today, as I said, is the third Sunday of Pascha. And there were myrrh-bearers. There were two men, Joseph of Arimathea and Nicodemus, who took Jesus' body down from the cross, prepared it for burial, and laid it in a sepulcher. And also several women who, after the resurrection, visited Jesus' tomb, and they're the ones that found it empty. Now, Joseph of Arimathea was a wealthy man. You hear about him in the Bible a little bit, so we get from the church's tradition other things. He was an honorable counselor of the Jews who had some sway with the Roman governor. Joseph was able to pull strings, so to speak, and get permission to take possession of Jesus' body and to bury it, because otherwise it might have been disposed of dishonorably. It is said that Joseph was treated badly by the Jewish authorities because he buried Christ, and that he was tied up and thrown into a pit. But Jesus appeared to him after he rose from the dead to confirm his resurrection. Joseph escaped and went to his estate in Arimathea, and he was a first-hand witness of the resurrection. Nicodemus, or Nicodemus, as pronounced by some people, was a member of the Jewish Sanhedrin, the Jewish council, so he was aware of the motives and the plots behind the scenes that led to Jesus' arrest and his crucifixion. He is probably the source of that information in the gospel accounts, because there wasn't a fly on the wall. They didn't have security cameras recording those things. Someone had to be there, and it wasn't rumor. He was there. He became the source then for the gospel writers. Because he spoke openly about this and the resurrection, he was permanently removed from the Jewish council. There are many so-called myrrh-bearing women who went back and forth to Jesus' tomb several times and in different groups on that day, on that Sunday of Easter. And that explains why the multiple accounts of them in the four Gospels vary so much. Each account in the Gospels describes a particular group and a particular visit. Patristic tradition has it, and here if you really want to go, you can go look up St. Gregory Palamas homily on the myrrh-bearing women, or on the Sunday of the myrrh-bearing women, and this is where I'm getting the information from, okay? That when he rose from the dead, Jesus appeared first to his mother, the Virgin Mary. That the angel, probably the Archangel Gabriel, removed the stone from the tomb specifically for her to see that it was empty, parentheses. The stone was not removed so that Jesus could exit, okay? The resurrection was not actually, the actual event of the resurrection of Jesus from the dead was not witnessed by anybody, and he did not need the stone to be moved away. He walked through doors afterwards, right? So whatever that was, he didn't need, unlike the movie, whether he got out naked or whatever, nobody saw it, so we don't know. But the stone was moved away so that the women could see that it was empty and could report the resurrection. So the evangelist did not explicitly describe Jesus' first appearance to his mother because they felt it would present a conflict of interest, namely the testimony of a family member, and thus diminish the credibility of their account. So they focused on Mary Magdalene and call the Virgin Mary the other Mary, or the mother of James, or the mother of Joseph. Remember, Mary was eventually married to Joseph, and Joseph had children from a previous marriage, and these were James, Joseph, Simeon, and Jude. So now, just to elaborate a little bit, if you read from the four Gospels, you can read those final chapters that talk about what happened, after the resurrection. And you see in one of them, it says that after the angel appeared to the women, it says the two women left the tomb with fear and joy. So how can you have fear and joy at the same time? A little bit weird, but if you read between the lines, it means that Mary Magdalene left with fear, the Virgin Mary left with joy. She understood what was going on. Anyway, you can read St. Gregory Palamas by yourself on your own time, and he'll explain it. So concerning Mary Magdalene, legend has it that sometime after Pentecost, she traveled to Rome and told Tiberius Caesar what Pontius Pilate had allowed to happen to Jesus. Some sources trace the red Easter egg tradition to this audience with Caesar. According to this account, Mary Magdalene, holding a plain egg, greeted Caesar and said, "Christ is risen." And he said, "It is just as likely that Christ rose from the dead as it is likely that the egg you hold will turn red." Well, that rhymes. Oh my gosh. And then the egg turned red, and Mary preached Christ to Caesar and the imperial household. It's from the books of the church. The term myrrh-bearers is a misnomer and an incorrect rendering of the Greek word mirophori. The women prepared, it says in the Bible, the women prepared spices and ointments or fragrant oils to anoint Jesus, not myrrh. Okay, myrrh is a kind of gum or resin, not a fragrant oil that the women brought. Nicodemus is the one who brought a mixture of myrrh and aloes. The Greek word for myrrh is smyrna, not myrrha. Myrrha means perfumes, fragrant oils, ointments, whichever version of the Bible you use, but it's not myrrh. Smyrna, this gummy, that's the English word myrrh. Phoros means someone who carries or bears this thing. So the myrrh, the mitophori gynecus describes, even if it's the misnomer, but describes the women who brought the ointments, the fragrant oils, and the perfumes to anoint the Lord's body. Let's stand and pray.